got to sit down with Corinne, a young adult from our church, and hear her story about leaving and returning to faith. We had so much fun, as I'm sure you'll be able to tell, and honestly, I learned a lot from Corinne's story. I learned a lot about some of the wrong assumptions church leaders can make about young people, and about how God really does work in each of our lives in the way that we exactly need it. Every person's faith journey looks different. If you've been enjoying the Park Ridge Presbyterian Church podcast, would you do us a favor and leave a review or even screenshot this episode and tag us at Park Ridge Presby on Instagram? We love knowing that the stories we share are making a difference for you. And your reviews or when you tag us, it reminds us of that. I hope you enjoy today's conversation with Corinne and hope that this episode and everything that we do at Park Ridge Presbyterian Church helps your faith make a difference for you every day. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Park Ridge Presby podcast, the podcast of Park Ridge Presbyterian Church in Park Ridge, Illinois. I'm your host, Amanda, and today I'm excited to share a conversation I'm getting to have with Corinne Farrell, who's one of the members of our church and grew up here in Park Ridge. And she's going to tell you a little bit more about herself in a minute, but we have three fun facts, Corinne and I. I'm also a Corinne, kind of. I'm Amanda Corinne, and I was really, really jealous that Corinne wasn't my name growing up. Like, really, really thought Corinne would have been a cooler name than Amanda. So we have that in common. We're both one of four kids, yes?
Yes.
Two girls, two boys?
Two girls, two boys. Boy, girl, boy, girl.
We were two girls, then two boys, but one of four kids, sisters, brothers, and we like a good iced coffee, don't we?
Year round.
There's never a not good
time. There's no off season.
There's no off season for iced coffee. Yes. Indeed. Corinne, I'm so glad you're here to talk to us on the podcast. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Sure. So funny that you wanted your name to be Corinne, because when I was little, I hated that that was my name because it was different. And I was like, I want to be like Brittany or Taylor, like all like the late 90s names. I was like, those are the names. And yeah. I hated my name, but now I appreciate it. So, so I grew up in Park Ridge and grew up in the church. I was baptized in the church. My family has been in Park Ridge Presbyterian Church for three generations. So my mom's parents were some of the very first members. And then they raised her and her siblings in the church. She got married in the church, and then all of my siblings were baptized and confirmed in the church. So we go way back to the beginnings. And then after high school, I went to University of Iowa for college, studied communication studies, which was great. Go Hawks. And moved to New York briefly after college, did an internship in Manhattan, and then came back to Chicago. And I started working for iHeartRadio. And then I actually just left there after 6 years and started a new role in sales operations for a company called Glowforge, which is a 3D laser printer company. So I've really done a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how does your communications role fit into like the sales stuff that you're doing now? Do you feel like it was all stuff that you learned at iHeartRadio that like led you in that direction?
Yeah, that's a good question. I often think about college, which I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but I think I learned far more outside of the classroom than in the classroom. I was super involved on campus, and I was part of the orientation program for new students, and I was president of campus activities board there, so learned about like event planning and that kind of thing. And I really feel like those experiences are stuff that are like tangible things I still use. Although I'm sure there's plenty that I learned in school that's in the back of my brain that I'm using, but the opportunities there, because it was a big school, were really what drove me. And then at iHeartRadio, I had no idea what I wanted to do, but I just took a job, and I learned very quickly that I thought sales as a, I don't want to say industry, but like as a profession is really cool, but I could not be a salesperson. Like, I am not a salesperson. I could do it if I had to, but I wouldn't like it or be very good at it. And so, but I really liked the back end of making sales teams successful and figuring out ways to make things more efficient and optimize processes and all that stuff. And so that's where I found that role. And then after a few years was ready to kind of take the next step and be the one in charge of that. So
that's awesome. It's so funny to be a pastor who's only ever worked in churches. Like, I went from college to graduate school. I've only ever worked at churches or camps like that. So the fact that somebody could go from like working at iHeartRadio to working at like a 3D printer company is like, I don't understand, because when you work in churches, you just keep working in churches, or you work at church like places. So, and my husband's was in coaching. He was in collegiate athletics, and then is now a police officer. Those are both things that you are like, you're just in them. And so when people are like, yeah, well, I worked for this thing, and then now I'm doing the startup thing, I'm like, I don't understand. How is that now your job? I don't get it.
I don't understand either. It's okay. Just happened.
Okay, good.
That makes me feel better. If you don't graduate as like a nurse or a lawyer or like one of those things where it's like, this is your career trajectory. Ooh, it's terrifying.
Right.
Otherwise, you're just like, I have no idea, but you just keep figuring it out.
It's like such an open floor plan, such a big map that like with so many different routes. And for some people, that probably sounds really exciting. It sounds really confusing to me. So, okay. I always thought this was a weird church person thing, but you're saying this is also weird. You don't know how you ended up there either. It's just,
no, I have no idea.
Great.
I remember graduating middle school and the principal saying, I don't know why I remember this, but saying, most of you are going to end up working in jobs that don't even exist yet. And I was like, I sat there and I was like, that doesn't even make sense. I was like what? Like, what does that even mean? And now I'm working for a 3D laser printer company.
Right.
Turns out right. He was right. Yeah.
They were right.
Mm-hmm. They were right all along.
That's awesome. Okay. So that's what you do for work. And that's a new job recently. So congratulations.
New job. On that. Yeah. Thank you.
Exciting. Okay. So the reason why I wanted to have Corinne on our podcast is because one of the other unique things Corinne and I have in common is we are on the younger end of people who are in churches and in our church. We love our church. Our church is diverse. It has some young families, but younger people are, we are some of the younger people. I'll say that. We are some of the younger people. So today we're going to talk about what it's like to grow up in the church and having a faith that matters, that makes a difference. At our church, we think that faith makes a difference and can make a difference every day if we let it. And so we're going to talk a little bit about growing up in churches and being young adults in church now and what that's like. So Corinne, your whole family grew up in PRPC, going all the way back. But for you, what was it like as like a little kid, Sunday mornings, getting to church? What was that like?
Yeah, I, as far back as I can remember, it was just part of like the week. That was just, you know, Saturday was t-ball games and soccer games, and Sunday morning was church and donuts at coffee hour after. Those are the two big things I remember. But it was great. I always saw it as like, I guess I didn't know any different, but like I always thought of it as like the way you end your weekend is you go to church, and it's really fun. And my grandparents were there every Sunday, so it was like getting to see them. And it was just sort of like part of my routine and part of my life that I never even thought twice about as a little kid. And the two like most, I think, impactful and fun memories I have are vacation Bible school in the summer, which I just thought was the coolest. I don't know. I felt like I was a celebrity going to, I don't know why. I just thought it was so cool. We got the WWJD bracelets.
Yes.
Fabric bracelets, classic. And then also the fall ice cream social was so fun. So those two things I always remember when I was really little were like the highlight that I really loved. So yeah, it was just part of life.
I love that. It was just part of life and it was fun. Mm-hmm. Like there was something there that was fun for you. I think sometimes people tell stories about growing up in churches where like it was very serious. Church was very serious and you sat very still and you got shushed and you had to wear serious clothes. And it sounds like church was just a fun place for you and you got to be a kid there. And isn't that great? Ice cream is great. Ice cream socials are great. You know,
won so many good prizes. Yeah, it was amazing.
That's awesome. So was there ever a time where your routine on Sunday mornings got disrupted when you got a little older, teenage years, middle school years? Did you ever kind of stop going, or was your family consistent until you graduated high school?
Yeah. So once I got to be like older, grade school, middle school is probably when it shifted a little bit for me from being like the fun, just part of life, to feeling more like an obligation or a chore. I'm the youngest of four. And so one thing my mom always said to us when we started to get a little bit older was, I don't care what you do afterwards, but you will be confirmed. Like after that, it's your choice. If you keep going, I can't force you. I can't make you, but you will be confirmed. And then it's up to you. And so that was always just like, oh, okay. Like checking the box, you know, it didn't, you know, to be honest, as I got older and it just, I felt more disconnected. I think there wasn't a lot pulling me in anymore, or making me feel like it was necessarily a welcoming or warm or positive place. And it's not anything that any one specific person did or didn't do. It just, something just changed from when I was little to when it was like fun. And so it became more of a chore, and seeing my siblings go through confirmation class, I was like, oh man, now I'm gonna have to do it. It seemed like work. Even though the two people who did it were great, it was just, it didn't, when you're younger, it just feels like an obligation. It doesn't feel,
yeah, you know, it's like school, it's a hard thing Sunday to grasp.
Yeah. And so it just feels like one more thing you have to do that you don't have a lot of control as a kid. And so this is one more thing that you have to do. And so that's probably when I started to feel a little bit less connected and less like it was a priority in my life. And then after I got confirmed, I think all my siblings were this way. We just kind of stopped going because we did what we had to do where we got confirmed, and it just, you know, people went off to college and we got older, and it just fell out of the routine. It just wasn't part of the routine anymore. And so, yeah, I think that's where it started. I sort of fell into that pattern that so many young people is, you know, you do it while your parents want you to and make you, and then you just kind of drift away.
Yeah, absolutely. It is so common. And then think about everything else that you're thinking about and going through and changing and experiencing at that age too. I don't often think about that when I think about, like, you know, being in student ministry, right? And thinking about whether students are showing up or not showing up. I'm often thinking about, like, well, my program, my confirmation class, like, my church. But really it's like these kids and everything that they live and die by their social life. Then you think about kids this year and social life, and everything has changed because of the pandemic. And it's like, man, one more forced obligation, one more place where you don't really feel like you fit or really feel like it's safe. Like, that is not where an eighth grader thrives, you know?
No. Yeah. And I, something that I struggled with starting as a little kid, like, I always remember dealing with this, is like, I've always had really bad anxiety. And so having anxiety and feeling like you have to go into this building and deal with topics that are like unattainable to an eighth grader, honestly, that you can't even wrap your little mind around and really understand. And so it was just like the worst case scenario for me. It was like, I did not want to go, you know, I didn't feel comfortable.
You didn't have friends there. It sounds like your friends weren't at church, right? They were.
I grew up with, and that, yeah, like, I knew and was friendly,
like, your safe
with,
best
but they weren't my best friends.
Exactly.
You know, my best friends were, had most of my friends growing up were Catholic school kids. So
yeah,
like, they went to public school, but like, they were in CCD and they had all that. And so
exactly,
that wasn't something that we like shared at all.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes just having like, well, it's like, when do you get your new schedule when you're in high school or whatever? Oh. And it's like, do I have lunch with my friends? Are they in bio with me? And just having a friend in a class makes such a big difference. And so, you know, you're already at that stage of life where that's true. and you don't have a friend at church that is going to be like your buddy through all of it. And it's just, it's a pattern that so many kids fall into where they're like, this is not for me.
Yeah. And I think too, I don't remember the details or reasons or really who was in charge or in leadership when I was that age. That was a while ago now, but I do remember there wasn't like a, as far as I recall, there was not a dedicated like youth leadership, younger adult who was running those things. And so that's really hard too, when you're that age, to try and connect with someone. You know, it makes a difference if someone's in their 20s or 30s versus their 40s, 50s, 60s, trying to connect as a young person. It becomes that much more difficult to feel like you're a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So then you get confirmed and you do what a lot of kids do. And, you know, you were given the choice and you were like, Mom, I get to choose. I'm going to not go to church. You go off to Iowa. Tell us about that. That leaving home experience is such a big deal for identity formation, period, but also for faith sometimes.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a big deal for me. Both my parents went to University of Iowa. It's where they met. So Iowa was always like a sort of like the closest I was going to get to home away from home. And I really wanted to force myself to go somewhere far away so that I couldn't just come back every weekend, and I really had to stretch myself. And so Iowa was great. I loved it there, but no, I mean, church and God were not even on my radar. Like, it just wasn't part of my life at that time. And the one thing I do remember about church and God and my faith during that time, it was always there in the very back. Like, it's always been there, but it was not something I thought about on a daily basis. I didn't act on it. I didn't really do anything in that regard. But I do remember that every year I would go to Ash Wednesday service at a random church. I don't know what the drive was. I just remember seeing my freshman year kids walking around with ashes and being like, Ash Wednesday. And it just felt like that was the one church service you could go to and sort of be anonymous. Like, I went to a random church. I don't even remember. It might have been Methodist. I don't know what denomination it was. But, it, you know, like a Wednesday night in a college town, people are out. Like, people are out and going out and hanging out with people. And I was, you know, two blocks away from downtown where it was a party scene. And I would go sneak into the back of this church and just, like, sit quietly and listen. And I don't know if it felt like I was at home, sort of, you know, like it was like a piece of home in a little bit that I could like sit in the back of a church and it was somewhat familiar, but it didn't require anything of me. Like, I didn't have to participate. They didn't know who I was.
Yeah.
I just sat there and then that was it. You know, much, much easier to do a Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock than a Sunday morning when you're
a college 21. Kid for sure. Yeah.
So that was 4 times in college I went to church, and those were the 4 times.
That's amazing. And it's interesting. I'm sure it could have been any other, you know, regular event in your church life that you know, it could have been Palm Sunday was the thing you did. It could have been anything, but the fact that it was Ash Wednesday and that it's such a, in our tradition, such a ritual type thing. There aren't a ton of rituals when you're Presbyterian. There's a handful, but Ash Wednesday is pretty like, you can kind of go to any Ash Wednesday service and they kind of sound the same, right? It's the same scriptures. It's, you know, it's the same ashes. And so it's just really interesting that what you found was also going to look pretty similar wherever you ended up. And that's really interesting.
Yeah. So I've always had a special fondness for Ash Wednesday. I don't know. I really don't know what, like, drove me to go my freshman year, but then every year after that, I was like, "Oh, it's Ash Wednesday."
So yeah,
I guess I'll go. So yeah,
I also really like that the idea that being able to be anonymous was somehow comforting versus like anxiety producing. And that's something for us, you know, that's just a really interesting thing too, because we often in the church talk about like how being known is so important and like greet the visitor. But it's like, but if you're the young visitor, maybe that's not at all what you want. Maybe you're like, no, thank you, with your overly hospitable smiles.
Yeah, I'm I'm your like, I am slow to warm up to people. And so a lot of people, like, I'm very quiet when you first get to know me, because it just, I really have to think about things and observe and understand before I, you know, really get comfortable and dive in. And so, like, yeah, being anonymous was a huge thing. And I think that was also part of the reason, like, when I was home for holidays or whatever, like, I still didn't want to go to church at Park Ridge Presbyterian, because there were so many people that knew our family, knew me, and I didn't really want to talk to anyone or have people be like, how's college? What are you up to? What are you doing? Like, I was like, I don't know.
What are you going to be when you grow up?
I still don't know what I'm going to be. I sell lasers now. Like, I don't know. And so being like unseen was oddly comforting. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes for younger people, we've got kind of these, not for some people, it's baggage. For some people, it's not. For some people, it's just like, I don't like how the church talks about this, or the church seems to have a roadblock with this, and I don't, you know, fill in the blank topic. Did your walk with faith ever have any kind of moments like that where you're like, I cannot get behind what my church is doing or saying or whatever? Or was it more just like the way your kindergarten best friend probably isn't your kindergarten best friend anymore? Or maybe they are. I don't know.
In my case, they are. So what? I hate to break the trend.
Corinne,
I'm even the godmother of her son. I know. Sorry.
Dang, you ruined my
life. Like my college freshman roommate.
Yeah.
We are not friends.
Distance. Yeah, exactly.
We do not speak.
You spent 9 months in a crowded space together. And you're
terrible.
And you did not need to keep each other in your life, mm-hmm. you and your freshman year roommate.
That was easy.
Can I tell you, party. I'm super jealous of people who have had friends since childhood, because I moved around a lot as a kid. So my theory, the four of my siblings were like a little rat pack, and we're all close, and I'm close with all of them. And my theory is we moved around so much, we were each other's only friends for like a decade. Like, so it's great. You had a built-in friend in the house, mm-hmm. but also when people are like, oh yeah, we've been friends for 30 years. I'm like, what are you talking about though? Like, I don't understand.
But you're 32. How?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't understand. Oh, and your moms are friends. You vacation together. And like, wait, what? Where was that in my life?
Yeah.
I just have siblings over here.
I know. Well, I do consider my siblings like my other best friends. Like, we're all very close, but yeah, I did meet my first best friend in kindergarten. Well, and we still talk every day.
That's beautiful.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. I love that a lot for you. And you're their godmom?
Of her youngest son, yeah.
I love that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is totally random, but I think you shared a meme once about how, like, you realized your sibling, it was a meme saying that, like, you realized your siblings, like, had their own life and they weren't just, like, supporting actors. Do you remember that?
Yes. When I saw that, I was like, 100%, because they're all married. One of them just became a parent. Like, I have a new nephew. But I'm just like, you're not like adults with your own lives and marriages and what? No, you're just,
you're all the Ferrells and you also live here in the house.
Yeah. And we're just, why are you late to dinner? And where are you? That's how I feel all the time. So, yeah.
I felt so seen in like a bad way when I read that, because I still would really love to believe that they're all still just supporting actors in my own.
Yeah,
story.
They don't answer my phone call. I'm like, I'm sorry, do you have your own, what are you doing? Working?
What are you doing?
Or being a husband or a wife or a father? Come on. What if I want to talk about, you know, this funny video I saw?
Right. This is also important, family. This
very
is
important.
This is up here with new baby.
Yeah.
New cat video, new baby.
Exactly. Yeah.
Same level. Awesome. So I digress. But like a freshman year roommate, and you end up not being that close. Do you feel like that is how your faith trajectory went? Or were there some big moments where you're like, I don't know if I can have faith. I don't know if I can believe.
Yeah, there weren't any necessarily big moments that stand out. It was just sort of a general sense of like a slow but steady disconnect for me that the older I got and the more I like thought about things and saw the world and experienced things, you know, in my own personal life, it just felt less and less important, or I don't know the best way to describe it, but it just felt like it was less and less a part of me. And so it just kind of faded away into the background. And like I said, I think it was always kind of there, because why else would I be going to Ash Wednesday service once a year in a college town when everyone else is going out? So something in the back of my head was always kind of keeping, it was, you know, a small little flame still lit there, but it didn't feel like an approachable or welcoming place or experience to be part of. And again, I don't think it was necessarily any one person or one group of people. It was just in general, it felt very distant and hard to understand or connect with as a young person.
Definitely. Yeah, I think a lot of people would relate to that, right? Both relate to the feeling of faith just fading to the background, and before you know it, like not even on purpose, not even a choice, just fading to the background. I think a lot of adults later in their life would relate to something like that. Like, oh yeah, because I'll talk to parents sometimes where like once their kid, like so it's true that when kids graduate high school, their faith trajectory can drop off for sure. I've also seen it be true of parents of kids at that phase. Cause like, you know, parents are involved in their kids' faith. Can you drop me off at this? Can you take me to this? You know, we got to go shopping for the mission trip. This. And then when it's like that one extra point of connection is gone. And then you've got people in their 60s, like feeling like, oh man, I used to do church things and I just don't anymore. And, so I think a lot of people would find that part relatable for sure. So then what happened with that small voice though, that small flame? What happened from four times a year Ash Wednesday services to your recent life?
That's a great question. and since you asked me to do this, I've been trying to think like, yeah, what was it that like brought me back? Like I said, there was always like that small flame in the back, right? Like it never really went all the way out. Which I think is a testament to the church of the foundation and that it laid for me. And that like, you know, my family, the importance, like even though I walked away from it deep down, it was still part of me and I knew and felt connected, even though I didn't maybe on a surface level feel connected. But two of the probably biggest things that happened after college, but before I started kind of finding my way back. The first thing was that my dad got sick and ended up passing away. And so that was a very intense emotional experience for that like kind of 2 year period. And that just like a lot of things, it's one of those things where it happens. And then after it's over, it's sort of like, now what? Like, you know, you're taking care of someone or you're worried about someone, and then it becomes now what? And you just kind of think and really reflect and think about their life and your life and, you know, all of that. And then about a year after that, I went through a breakup. So I had been dating someone since college, and it was one of those things where, you know, you think you're going to end up together and, oh, we're going to get engaged and we're going to, you know, let's have kids before we're 30. Haha, I'm 29. I do not have any children or any on the way. But you're young and you just think you have it all figured out in your early 20s of like, oh, well, this is good. Check this box. This is going to be my person. And then we broke up unexpectedly. And so those two things really were some moments for letting myself break down a little bit and have some self-reflection and look at myself and think about like, who am I? What's important to me? What really, really matters in life? Those are two things that kind of really make you look to like, what is actually the point? What matters most?
Yeah.
Like the rest of it is just noise. And so those two things really kind of broke me down. And I think in a really good way. I wouldn't have thought that in the moment, but looking back, I think there were really, you know, there's silver linings to those things. And so when I sort of, after maybe another year after that breakup, is when I sort of started to feel like maybe there's something missing here that I need to address. And I think that's when I started thinking about like, So that little flame back there, that's just kept burning. So that's really when I started to think about like, okay, so what does this mean? Like, why is this still kind of here? And why did these two really hard life experiences make it almost grow a little bit bigger? When a lot of times if something bad happens, it becomes easy to turn away from faith. It's almost like it drew me back in a little bit. And so that's really when I started to think about like, maybe I need to take a second look here, or maybe I need to, you know, give this another chance or explore what this means. And so that's when I started going on holidays with my mom. We would go, you know, Christmas and Easter, and like there was a Thanksgiving Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah, like a community thing. Yeah.
And exactly. It was like, okay, you go during those. And it was like, okay, yeah. But then actually, ironically, as we're talking about this on a podcast, it was what really drew me back in was my mom mentioned she was going to church regularly and I was not. And she mentioned that the new pastor, who I was not there when I grew up, who is Josh, but she was like, you know, he's really great. Like, you should listen to his sermons. They're really great. I feel like they're very approachable and attainable and easy to understand and connect with. And I was like, yeah. And then she mentioned something about, oh, I think they're doing a podcast. And I was like, what? And so I remember literally one day sitting at my desk at work and looking it up, because I would listen to podcasts all day at work because I can't sit in silence. And I looked Park Ridge Presbyterian Church podcast up, and there were a bunch of sermons. And I was like, And so I just clicked on one, and I don't even remember what, don't tell Josh this, I don't remember what it was, what the topic was or whatever, but I just remember being like, huh, this is different than I remember. Like, and I listened to some more, and then, you know, I really like kind of binge listened to a bunch of them and just felt like, oh, this is nice. Like, this is kind of, I don't know. It just felt like this is kind of filling that void of like the bigger picture, the bigger meaning piece of my life that I knew was back there. And I just didn't know quite how to deal with it or embrace it. And so I actually sent him an email, which I looked up earlier today, because I was like, when did I send this? In February of 2019.
Okay.
And I had met Josh maybe like once.
Right, like my probably mom introduced, Christmas or something,
yeah,
right?
My mom was like, this is my youngest daughter. Like, he didn't know me. I didn't know him.
Yeah.
And I emailed him and said, hey, I just want you to know, like, these podcasts are really great. And it's been a way for me to kind of reconnect to my faith. And it may seem like a small thing to you, but it's made a really big impact in my life. And it's, you know, it's really great. And I really appreciate it. And then since then, I opened the Pandora's box, I think, into getting into leadership. Because then I sent that email, and in the email I said, I admit I do not go in person as often as I should. And then when I said it, I was like, maybe I should start going in person. So then I started going more regularly. And then once he saw me like attending on a regular basis, I think that was like game over. And he started like trying to get to know me and like, you know, wanted to see.
Jeez, what a stalker, Josh.
Yeah, what a weirdo. No, he kidding. Did. I mean, that's his job, and he did a really
just
job.
Kidding. Good congregational care, Josh.
Yes, and you too. Like, then you, it was just like, then I got totally, totally brought in, which was
we
really
hoodwinked
great.
You.
Yes.
We're like, no. Let's get to know Corinne. Corinne's so great. Corinne and I had like an Instagram friendship for like 6 months before we ever like started talking in real life. Cause you did, I knew you started coming, but I wasn't really in the service very much. I was always down with the kids in Sunday school. So, and I'm always just like surrounded by a herd. Pre-pandemic was always surrounded by a herd of small humans. So that's not a very approachable space to live in on a Sunday morning. So like, other than like, hey, what's up? You know, we mostly like talked on Instagram because there's a herd of children to get through, and you can't really have a standing conversation on Sundays.
I think it was mostly the iced coffee posts.
Mostly. Really, just back and forth. Ice coffee tags.
Oh, do you drink iced coffee in January too? That's great. Me too. Yeah.
All day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. And then we hoodwinked you and we're like, Corinne, you're at our church a lot. Do you want to be at our church even more in yeah. this virtual capacity of leadership right now?
Yeah. So I think honestly, even before I was nominated and asked to be a trustee, you had talked to me about going on the mission trip with the youth because you were going to be, you would have had Riley by then?
I would have had Riley by then. Yeah. I was about to be home with the baby and could not go on a week.
Can't really go down south on a mission trip. Yeah.
No.
I was all in on that, even though I never went on a mission trip as a child. I was like, sure, I'll lead one. Why not?
Why
take a week
not?
Off of work. That sounds good.
We can paint things. We can figure it out.
I'll drive a big van, passenger van with middle school, high schoolers that probably think I'm a loser. Yeah.
It'll absolutely. Be fine. Yep. I do think I am guilty of trying to rope you in first.
Yeah.
You would have had so much fun should the pandemic had not ruined it, but there's still time.
I even had fun when we did the scavenger hunt at Navy Pier, and that was my first chance to get to know some of the kids. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
It's a really great group of young people. So
they're good.
I was
humans.
All in, I was ready, and then the pandemic.
I know.
That was a bummer, but
I know. I was secretly like a little glad it got canceled because I would have had so much FOMO if you all went without me. I would have been sitting at home with this baby, not knowing what to do with this baby and being like, why can't I be with those cool people?
Yeah.
I would have had so much FOMO. So whenever we do get to do it again, it'll be great.
Absolutely.
It'll be great. I do love that the podcast helped bring you in. And again, you could be anonymous. You were anonymous until you sent that email.
Yeah.
You were, and you could just like receive something good. Like you could just receive a little good news, you know, and it could just be for you and like kind of building you back up and letting that flame get a little bigger. And it didn't need to be like now where, man, we really ruined this one for you.
No. It's like I said earlier, like I'm so slow to warm up to people when I first get to know them. And so kind of reintroducing myself to faith and to God and to what that means in my life, it was crucial that it was anonymous in the beginning and that it required really nothing of me other than to just listen,
right,
which is what I needed. And so it's honestly like the best way it could have happened. I don't know that it would have happened a different way.
Right. If we were like, oh man, Corinne's in town, like Corinne lives in town now. Corinne needs to come to this.
Driven me right back to New York.
So it sounds like it really happened kind of the way that God intended for you to come back because it happened in the way that you needed, not what the church needed, not what your mom needed, not what old people at church that love you needed. It happened this way and it could be on your terms and you could just be told kind of week after week that God loves you and now look, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it is kind of cool looking back on it, like how it started to now that it happened the way it was supposed to.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, maybe I do know what drove me to send that email to Josh. That is not like me, but I just felt like he needed to know that it was making a difference. And then, you know, that opened me up to then coming in person and getting to know Josh and you and really getting involved. And so I'm grateful for that too.
Yeah.
So it was like at the right moment, I kind of broke that next ceiling and started being in person and not so anonymous anymore.
Yeah. I love that. I also love when sometimes God nudges us to do things that are just way out of character and then it changes us. How dare
God?
What? But saying that that's like not a normal thing for you to do, like send an email like that little of a nudge can have an impact. And I think that's it's like examples like that are how we know faith can make a difference. But it's like, it's little baby things. Like you sent an email, but that was a big thing to you. That was like a, it was a new thing to do it, and it, and yeah, it mattered. And
I didn't know it was going to lead to 2 years later, me being in all these leadership groups, but I mean, it was, I'm very grateful that I sent it for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How have you, now that you are, so Corinne's a trustee, which is one of the boards at the church. They deal with really fun things like budgets and money and buildings, and Jesus loves her a lot for being on that committee, because not everybody wants to sit in meetings about budgets. Maybe I'm one of them. So Corinne's a trustee. She's also leading a team, working on a big project at the church around a merger exploration. So those are like big deal things that you're doing. Are those things helping your faith make a difference for you right now? Or are they just helping you be more a part of the community?
I think both. I think regardless of what it is, I think serving within the church is an important piece of like my faith. Is like, you know, it's all great to sit there anonymously and listen, but then what are you doing to make a difference is sort of how it was in my head. And so if I'm asked to help or do something, like I have the time, I have the means, I have the ability, there's no reason for me other than being like, I'd rather
watch TV. Netflix.
Yeah. Or I'd rather like, you know, go hang out with friends on a, well, not during a pandemic, but go hang out with friends on a weeknight after work instead of going on a meeting or doing this or that. Like there's no excuse other than me wanting to be selfish in a way. And so I felt like it was like, you know, this is what's asked of me, and I want to contribute and give back, because truly the church and the leadership team at church, like you and Josh, and it, like, that's what brought me back to my faith. So the least I can do is spend, you know, a couple hours a month doing some meetings and doing, you know, little things to give back. And actually this whole process of the church merger and meeting people from another church, also a Presbyterian church, but just hearing about their experiences and their, the way faith has played a role in their lives and what that church and that congregation has meant to them and their families, is, if anything, that just continues to, you know, drive my faith that it's such an important thing, and people are connected to their church and their building and their congregational family. And so if anything, it's just like solidified how I feel.
Yeah. That's awesome. Sometimes, I on staff am the young person in charge of the young people at the church. And I'm like the biggest resistor to including young people in leadership, because I think they don't want to, because I think it will like make them annoyed or something at us. And I'm like, no, we need to keep them happy. Like when you were a kid, like ice cream and games and keep them happy.
WWJD bracelets.
Yes. Yeah. Swag. Like, and so sometimes I'm actually the biggest resistor to including young people in leadership, to our church's detriment, right? Because what if I had said, like, Josh, no, you can't. Like, you can't invite young people onto session and trustees. They won't like it. They won't like us. They'll leave. And then we'd miss out on you and all the other young people we just elected to our boards. And sometimes churches have a bad habit of never helping people get beyond their Sunday school faith. Like, we only ever teach people what they learned when they were like 6 and 7. And so then they're like 30 and they only know what they knew when they were 6 or 7. And they were only asked to do what they were asked to do when they were 6 and 7. And that would be such a shame. And so really in the last year, like, I've been watching who's come into leadership and watching the things that you guys are doing and how you're helping us lead. And like, been like, man, I would have stood in the way if I, you know, like knew more of what was coming down the pipe. I would have been like, don't bother them with this. And I would have been so wrong. I would have been so wrong. And so I like hearing that both like being involved in leadership is actually helping your faith, but it's also like helping the church change. It's helping our church leadership change along with it, along with you guys. So I was wrong. Josh was right. Whatever.
Well, I'm big on when you're part of a community or a group or whatever, like there's no task that you're too good for or is beneath you or isn't your responsibility. You know, you pick up whatever you can and give what you can, how you can. And so if this is something that's going to help the greater good and, you know, to help other people's faith in some way. If me, you know, sitting in this meeting, doing these spreadsheets, having these Zoom calls, like it could be the nudge that somehow it gets someone else's faith restored. I don't know, you know, but it's whatever I can do, because I feel like, you know, I've been given a lot, and it's, the church has made a huge difference in my life, that if I can try and give back and help even one other person in some way, then that's the whole point. So, I mean, I think like with all things, having a diverse group in leadership is so key, you know, whether that's diverse in age or gender or ethnicity, whatever it is, multiple perspectives and differing perspectives is what's going to create the best result. And if a certain group doesn't have a seat at the table, they're going to be left out. And so if the young people don't have a seat at the table with leadership or direction of the church or that kind of thing, it's not going to be top of mind. It's not going to be part of the decisions that are made. And so it just becomes a sort of perpetual, you know, failure with young people in the church. And so having my perspective, I think, is helpful because of my age, because of my experience with church. You know, like, it is a common experience. You go until you don't have to go anymore when you're a kid, and then you maybe come back, maybe you don't. And so I think, like I said, like having a seat at the table is what makes a difference. And if you're not there, you're not part of the conversation. And so just opening that door and trying to make sure that young people are seen as part of the congregation and an important part, because eventually they'll be the ones who are older and need to open the door for the young people coming after them. And so just remembering that and keeping that as a priority is really important.
Let's say your mom didn't tell you about the podcast or whatever, you know, like, what do you think you would have wanted somebody to say to you to help you give faith a second chance?
I think the first thing I would say is that no one should feel guilty or like beat themselves up about the fact that you became disconnected or it wasn't a priority, because that's just life. Like, if anyone in anything in life, when you walk away for something or something falls out of your life and you need to bring it back, like, it's only going to work when you decide. It doesn't matter who's telling you or what social pressures, it comes down to when you're ready and when you decide that it's time and it's something that you need and want in your life. And so just listening to that voice in the back of your head, because I think it is there for everyone who grew up in the church. Like you said, it's a really hard thing to forget that core message when you're a little kid about Jesus loves you and Jesus and what that means, and the love and acceptance and welcoming, and the sense of home and community that the word Jesus should conjure up in you. And so I think just recognizing that little voice or that little flame back there that you know is still there, and just sort of letting it grow as it needs to. I think like I said, like, forcing it is never going to work. You have to come to God and come to your faith on your own terms and in your own way. But also recognizing when God maybe is giving you a little nudge, like, don't resist it too much. Like, I could have decided not to send that email or not to listen to that podcast, but I let myself sort of be curious and be, you know, take a small risk, very small risk, but just kind of take that little step. And so I think you kind of know deep down when there's a step that you need to take. And so just kind of recognizing it and allowing yourself to do that on your own timeline. But I also think about going back and looking at scripture in the New Testament about, there's so much that people in society and in politics and in culture just hammer home about what you shouldn't do as a Christian, as a person of faith, or what it, like, what's right to do and what's wrong to do and what it means, and to put things into buckets. And I just think that's just not, at least for me, that's not how I see faith. It's not about like a yes and no, and this is your checklist and da, da, da. Like, it's just, it's a little bit different for everyone, but the core message is there of that God's always waiting for you. And so whenever you're ready, you know, obviously the sooner the better in his eyes, but whenever you're ready, like, it doesn't matter how long you've put it off or ignored it, that you're not in trouble. You don't have to feel guilty. Like, the only person it was hurting was you not having it part of your life, and recognizing that, like, it's going to make things, it's going to give you a perspective of life, because it's the older you get, the harder life is. Like, it's just hard. There's hard things that happen and difficult chapters you have to go through, but having that piece of faith just makes it makes your perspective, you're just able to face it in a different way. It's hard to explain, but just recognizing, like, everything, things are hard, but it's easier when you have your faith. It's just, it's like an extra hand to hold, to walk you through that. Really, no person or no institution or no place can give you. And so whatever way it calls you back, to just kind of listen and let it happen in your own time.
I love that that is such a shame-free response. And I don't think I would have said the same things or known the same things. Like, the church can be really bad about shaming people on purpose or on accident, right? Mm-hmm. We can be the people being like, well, you should have done this, or you should have come home sooner. So everything that you said offers such a shame-free response to somebody in that situation, and also an encouragement to be open. When you feel that nudge, you can say yes. You can take a next step. You can send an email. You know, so both an openness, but one that's, like, so free of shame, I think is exactly what young people need from the church. And if not from the church, then from the people in their life, because mm-hmm. we don't need any more shame, right? We don't need any more shame. That's not good for any of us. And so, you know, an openness that we can grow and we can be loved in this really intense, radical way, that we can actually say yes to God's love. Like, that's a big thing to be open to. That's like, that takes some openness. But also the lack of shame surrounding it is just such a good reminder to people.
Yeah.
So I love that so much. Okay. You're great. The last thing is, we like to say that, you know, we like to help people's faith make a difference for them every day. Is there something that's making a difference for you? It can be really silly or really serious. Like, what made a difference for you today or this week in your life?
Faith related or anything?
No, anything. Just thing that made a difference. Be super silly, serious, anything.
I mean, honestly, the biggest thing, and it's hard to focus on anything else right now, is that I have a nephew, and it is the first baby in our family. And honestly, I live for, like, the good morning picture that my brother sends our family chat, and, like, the little videos and FaceTime calls. It's just the coolest thing in the world. And I just not to get too, like, woo, but looking in that little boy's eyes, he's 3 weeks old, not even 2.5 weeks old, is like seeing, like, a piece of you and your family. It's just so, I can't even imagine what it's like to have your own child, because this kid, I would do anything for this kid. And so that is, like, the biggest thing making a difference for me right now, is just how much joy and meaning that this little life brings into our family.
Thank you so much for being on our podcast and for sharing your story. And it's so full circle. The podcast was a part of your story.
I know. I thought about that as I was saying, I was like, oh,
here we go.
It all comes back to the podcast.
God won, Jesus.
Yeah. Well played.
Well played. Well, thank you so much for your time and for sharing your story. I know it's going to matter to so many people.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Listening today. If you'd like to hear more from us, you can subscribe to this podcast or find us on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube. We are @Park Ridge Presby on all platforms.